give it to it. Makes us all the better, faster, stronger.
Campbell on second down and 5.5. Looks right. Comes back to the left. Going long for Gordon. He's out there and he caught the ball at the 20, at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
Unbelievable catch, unbelievable throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Takes the snap, Dalton back, looking near side, throws it, picked off, and an open run. It's Joe Hayden, and he's in, touchdown!
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
We have got a huge, huge Football Friday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily for you, driven by Liberty Ford. You're going to hear shortly from a guy we affectionately know as the godfather of the National Football League. That is Gil Brandt, the one and only. He was the architect of all those great America's team, cowboy teams of the 1970s, still very much involved in the hierarchy of the league's player personnel area. He is an iconic figure in the NFL, and when it comes to the Combine, which is coming up, of course, next week in Indianapolis, we'll be there. Gil is the man, because it was Gil, along with other tremendous movers and shakers in the personnel ranks of the National Football League years ago, who came up with the concept of combining efforts of teams and pooling all those resources to have what we now know as the NFL Scouting Combine. It took on a lot of different versions and smaller pockets of teams that were working together, but then it finally became a national event and has grown into the monster event that we know it today. And of course, this show, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, other ESPN Cleveland programming, 850 WKNR, will be broadcasting from Indianapolis this week. Very excited to tell you about that too, as we will during the course of this show. We're also going to hear from John McClain, longtime friend of mine going back to our early days of covering the National Football League. He actually was covering teams in the United States Football League. That's how far back this goes, when Houston had a team there, the Houston Gamblers. But he's got a story about Johnny Manziel, which I know they were talking about on the Really Big Show, relative to Manziel's comments about playing with the Browns. We'll get into that with him because he had the opportunity to sit down with Manziel. He shared those quotes, of course, with Tony Grossi from ESPNCleveland.com. And that piece is, I know, posted there. And there was some discussion about those quotes from that piece. But we'll get, of course, the man who conducted the interview and get his insights into Manziel. My friend, Nathan Zagora, my partner, my buddy, I don't want this to sound awkward, but happy Valentine's Day. Am I supposed to say
happy
that
Valentine's Day to you, Notorious? Nothing wrong with that.
We're confident. We can say that.
That's right, absolutely. You know, interesting stuff. We'll talk about Johnny Football, the confidence he exudes, the image makeover he is clearly trying to make going from Johnny Football. That sounds to me like he doesn't want me to call him John Football. He wants to be Johnny Manziel, and that's fine. We'll talk with John McClain, as you point out, kind of get the insight and get the feeling of what it was like to actually be with him when he made those quotes about the Cleveland Browns and obviously about the Houston Texans. And I think it just goes to show that this is a guy who gets it, or at least is smart enough to surround himself with people who get it, because he skipped the Super Bowl and all the hoopla that comes around that to focus on training, said some very intelligent things, I think, about the Houston Texans, some very confident things, and also said some very intelligent things about the Browns that showed that he did a little research on his own and understands the history of what this team has gone through in terms of the number of quarterbacks that have been here, and basically that he's going to be the one to bring him there to the promised land of the Super Bowl. Right. We'll talk about that later. Now, the Godfather, Gil Brandt, joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And Gil, thank you so much for stopping by with Vic and myself today. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. The Combine coming up, the article on Johnny Manziel coming out today. What is your initial reaction to this kind of change from Johnny Football to John Manziel?
Well, first of all, let me say this. Liberty Ford has got the greatest bargain in the world with the two of you. So that's all I'm going to say. That's number one.
Thank you, Gil.
You know, this does not surprise me. John McClain talked to me the other day, and he said, I thought you were blowing smoke at me earlier when you told me about what the guy's doing. And he, you know, he's a, everybody criticizes. And, yes, the guy did some things, and, you know, even a saint like Vic did some things wrong when he was 19 or 20 years old. And it just happens. And, you know, it's easier to happen when you have a grandfather that's a millionaire, and I don't mean in single digits. He's got lots and lots of money. And can afford to let Johnny go and play golf and sit in the first row at basketball games and so forth. I don't know if there's a better competitor than him. I'll tell you, he will compete. And I think all you have to do is look at the Duke game when they were behind 28-0. Bowl game. What does it mean? It means nothing. A lot of guys packed a car. They've already left to go home. And he marshaled those guys up on the sidelines, and all of a sudden the 28-point deficit was a win for Texas A&M. So I think Johnny Manziel, in my estimation, is the top of my list. Now, I might change next week or the following week, but I spent a lot of time, and I think he's as good a quarterback as there is out there right now.
Yeah, Gil, I know you study all of these guys very, very thoroughly, and that's what you've done pretty much your whole life in the National Football League. So I want to ask you this. You've been very high on Manziel as an NFL quarterback for a while, and what I'd like to dig into a little bit, besides that competitive spirit, like you said, marshaling those players, wanting to will them to that bowl win, which was so impressive, what about the physical issues that keep coming up about lack of size and whatever and tendency to want to run most of the time? How do you see his game translating successfully to the NFL?
Well, first of all, let me say something to you, Vic. He has 10.5-inch hands, and when you have 10.5-inch hands, you can throw the ball in Cleveland. Now, if you're a quarterback that has 9-inch hands or under 9-inch hands, you have a very, very hard time of throwing that ball through the wind in places like Buffalo, Cleveland, Green Bay, you know, where they play outdoors. Chicago is what it is. He is size 15 feet, so you know he's not a little tiny footed guy. And when you see him, you're going to see a guy that's well put together. He'll come in and weigh 212 pounds somewhere in that area right there, and he's got good lower leg structure is what he has. As I said, you know, I don't like 6 foot tall quarterbacks. But I'll tell you what, there's been a lot of them that are pretty good, including a lot right now that's pretty good. You know, Breeze just is an eighth of an inch over that. Vic was just an eighth of an inch over that. Wilson is under that. And you know, Breeze won a Super Bowl and Wilson won a Super Bowl. So I think times have changed is what it is. But I saw him play live twice in his first year. And one was against SMU, and it was like the second game that he'd ever played. And, you know, SMU was not bad. They weren't good is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. And the guy was just absolutely great in the game. Is what he did, and I tell you, it was a hot afternoon, and boy, I tell you, when you're a quarterback and you're running around, and it's a hot afternoon, it doesn't do a lot for you. In fact, as I just looked it up, it was actually the first game of the season for him that he played, is what it was, and he put 46 points on the board at SMU.
He is certainly impressive. The tape there, very impressive. We heard Greg Cosell say the other day that there are inconsistencies in his tape, and I'm sure that's the case with any college player. But, Gil, what is it about Johnny Manziel relative to a Teddy Bridgewater, relative to a Blake Bortles, the other people that have been talked about at the top, that makes you so enthusiastic about him? I've even seen you say that he reminds you of Fran Tarkenton, only better.
Well, let me just say this to you, and Cosell brings up a good point. The LSU game, he didn't have a chance. I mean, LSU, the LSU just absolutely overpowered Texas A&M, and the guy was running for his life. Is what he was doing, and I think he completed 35% of his passes or 40% of his passes, something like that. You know, I'm not sure about Bortles, and let me go back with him for just a second. When you grow up in Florida and Texas, Ohio, there's no sleepers at the high school level because it's different if you live in Montana or Idaho or very few people in North Dakota where people go to check out players. And so Bortles is from the Orlando area, and coming out of high school, he had two scholarship offers, one to Purdue and one to Tulane. But you know what the scholarship offers were? They were for a tight end job, not a quarterback job.
Wow.
Is what they are. Bridgewater is a little bit of a concern to me. He's got a thin upper body, is what he has, and I think he was in a system where he had some good receivers. I think he's going to be a good player. You know, I think there's some good quarterbacks in this draft. I think that there's guys that are going to be in the second round. There's guys that are going to be in the third round that are going to end up being pretty good. There's probably 19 that are going to be drafted. Now, somehow you have to use your hocus pocus and find out, you know, which of the 19 are the ones you want, because, you know, one of them might not be worth a darn, although we think he is, and then one of them that you thought was going to be good turns out to be better than what you really thought he was. You know, the greatest thing is that one of the reasons Vic Carucci is successful is he works. He was the hardest working guy, even when he started making his seven-figure salary. Still work hard. And see, this is what you don't know about players. And I'll take you back in time. We drafted a guy named Calvin Hill on the first round. And Calvin Hill, all he wanted to do was work hard, make more money. The next year we said, well, we're really stealing somebody. Bill Thomas of Boston College had the same grades, same characteristics, say, as Calvin did. Working out for Bill Thomas, playing tennis three times a week. That was working out for him. So, you know, how do you get the guys that once they get the money, how do you get the guys like Mannings and Brady's that are going to work harder after they get the money than before they had it?
All right. Gil Brandt joining us. He is the godfather of the National Football League. Of course, you can read his great work on NFL.com, hear him on Sirius XM NFL Radio. Gil, I know you're very familiar, obviously, and know these people quite well, Joe Banner, Michael Lombardi. You know Jimmy Haslam. You've gotten to know him, I know, since he became the owner of the Browns. But I've got to ask you, relative to the timing of taking those two top football decision-makers out and then promoting Ray Farmer as a first-time GM, heading in only days before you're heading to Indianapolis and going into your real deep player acquisition mode, in the NFL. How does that maybe affect things from that standpoint? Where do you see the Browns organization going forward?
Well, you know, there's an old saying, take your first loss, it's your best loss. And you know, if you felt that those two people, and let me defend both of them, you know, I thought Joe Banner was very, very good. I have known him quite some time. I don't think there was anybody better in the world that understanding the salary cap and doing contracts. And I think sometimes what happens is that when a man becomes a head coach after being an assistant coach, he just doesn't grasp the whole picture, or he tries to do too much where he's really not familiar with. So, you know, I'm not privy to what happened to Joe Banner, but my dealings with him were always that he was very, very bright. I've known Mike Lombardi forever. And I know the pluses and minuses of Mike. Mike's a very, very, very good evaluator of football players. He knows he's on the cutting edge of ideas to do things. So, you know, obviously something happened. But to both of you, if your scouts, put the right grades down for people, if the Sanduskis put the right grades down for people, then it doesn't make any difference if a housewife's there doing it. is what it amounts to, because if they evaluate him correctly, it's not what Ray Farmer, it's not what anybody else is involved in doing it. And I have a great deal of faith in Sandusky as an example, and I think that you know, give him some responsibilities, and I think he'll respond to it.
Gil, I wanted to go back to something you said earlier when you talked about your quarterback rankings, and that may change after the combine. What is it about the combine for these guys that is so critical? Is it what they do throwing? We know some might not throw. Or is it more important what they do in the interviews and the meetings, showing their football knowledge and giving that personality insight? Is that where the big shifts happen?
Well, I don't think we're going to see probably any of them. I don't know if any of them are going to throw. And in defense of them, you know, it's hard because it's like you having a tryout for a golf team, and you play a course you've never played before. And in this case, you're throwing to receivers that you've never thrown to before. And so consequently, the speed of the play of those receivers is a lot different than what you're used to, is what it is. But I think that when you talk to players, you know, there's I call them quickness, learning quickness. And you know, they'll be asked to solve a problem in a short period of time, and some of them are going to do it in 3 seconds, and some of them are going to take 12 seconds to do it. And I think when you start doing those type of things, then it tells you a little bit about more about the players. I hope that the quarterbacks, you know, if they don't throw, I hope they do all of the drills, is what they do, and so that they do the three cone drill and see, this is where you pick up a player like Joe Flacco. And Flacco ran under 7 seconds in the three-cone drill. And everybody says, ah, this guy's a stiff, you know, because he's so big. But I'll tell you, last year at the end of the season, when he was running around out there avoiding tackles and not throwing interceptions, he didn't look much of a stiff. And that fell back to what I think it was 6.74 that he did in the three-cone drill.
Gil, one thing as far as the combine goes coming up, and we know the focus will always be on the quarterbacks as it will, and certainly Johnny Manziel will be will draw that huge crowd on that media availability. But another big story that broke this week: Michael Sam coming out and revealing that he is gay, and whether or not that is something that factors into how teams would approach him as a football player. And I guess that's the two-part question with you, is how you see that from an evaluative standpoint and with the NFL, and then two, what you're sort of anticipating from him, because, I know you're going to be very involved when these players, you bring these players up to the podium there in Indianapolis.
Well, Vic, you know, I put up a list of 100 seniors prior to the start of the season, seniors. Now, this is, you know, not people that decided that they were going to come out. There's no Clowneys in there as an example. There's no Manziels in there as an example. And I didn't have him in my top 100. What he did this year is I'm not sure why it took place, but, you know, he had three consecutive games, I think the third, fourth, and fifth game of the season, where he had three sacks. So after like the fifth game of the season, he had 9 sacks already. I don't think he's big enough to be a down lineman and play with his hand on the ground. I'm not sure he's the guy that can play in space. And so, you know, this is what we're going to have to find out, and that's why you do these things at the combine to find out. But, you know, as far as what he came out with last week, Vic, you've been around long enough, teams want to win.
Right.
You know, we take, you know, the Cleveland Browns took Gordon in the second round, and he had a lot of baggage. The Kansas City Chiefs took Houston in the third round. He had a lot of baggage. Both of those guys were in the Pro Bowl last year. So, you know, you're gonna put up with stuff as long as is the guy helps you win. Now, if he's on your 53 and is on 4 special teams and, you know, does some things, fine. if he's on your 53 and he's not playing on any special teams and doesn't do anything, then players start to say, well, why have we got him around here, is what it amounts to. But I think that knowing the history of the National Football League, I think he'll get a fair chance. I think he'll be evaluated fairly. And if he's draftable, I'm sure teams will do that. That's what they'll do.
Yeah, good stuff, Gil. Thank you so much.
Always. We could keep you on for the whole show, but you've got a few other things on your list today.
And Liberty Ford doesn't pay you enough.
That's right, Gil. Thank you for that.
We love that. You know, we are going to actually be driving. I'll be driving that Liberty Ford to Indianapolis as part of our coverage, Gil, so maybe I can give you a ride to dinner.
No, that I'm not going to do. If you let me drive, that'll be a different situation.
All right. I
remember Atlanta all too well.
As I say, there's got to be a good story
there. There is a good story, and Gil's been scarred for life from that. Gil, we'll see you next week in Indianapolis,
my friend. Look forward to seeing you. Bye.
Thank you. Gil Brandt, the one and only, and he is awesome breaking it down. Yeah, we had a little fun driving around Atlanta at a Super Bowl in the ice storm there.
I'm sure, yeah.
And Gil is happy that we're still alive to talk about it. All right, we've got much more coming up on CBD. We want to hear from you, 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. At 2 p.m. Eastern, we will have, I said Eastern because I know people listen to us from different places around the country as well online, but we're going to hear from John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, and he'll break down his story about Johnny Manziel, the comments Manziel made that were favorable to his wanting to be with the Browns, if in fact he's not the top overall pick or however that shakes out. There's a lot of different ways he could end up here with the Browns or end up somewhere else, but we'll get into that with him. In the meantime, you know, maybe you have a thought or two or three on Manziel or other quarterbacks. Gil Brandt laid out some interesting stuff about Teddy Bridgewater and the other prospects. So we'll dive into that stuff. He is Nathan Zagura. I'm Vic Carucci. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, and we are driven proudly by Liberty Ford.